All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Let's begin. Beautiful daf today. Today's daf is Chav Hey. We are picking up on Chav Dalet Amud Beis right by the Gemara. So remember again, so that's we're picking up 24b, 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom. So the Gemara begins by saying, Maishna Resha, Umaishna Seipa. So remember again, the Mishnah that we read yesterday began with discussing the idea that a person must distance a goren, a greenery, an established greenery, goren kavua, from the city 50 amas. And then the seifa of the Mishnah ended off by saying that a person must go ahead and distance a greenery far enough that it does not do damage. So it asks the Gemara, why in the Resha does it say 50 amas? And the seifa, it says only enough to distance from doing damage. So says the Gemara, Amra Abaye seifa nas on the goren sheino kavua. So ultimately Abaye says it's about two different types of greeneries. The Resha is talking about what we call a goren kavua, an established greenery. That's a 50 amas setback. And versus the seifa, the end of the Mishnah is talking about a non-established greenery, which there, again, because it's not established, so the standard we use is that it has to be far enough away in order not to do damage. So the Gemara says, Hechi dami goren kavua. What's the definition of an established greenery? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Hechi dami goren sheina kavua. What's the definition of a non-established greenery? Any greenery where you don't go ahead and move the grain around with a shovel, that is called a temporary greenery. The idea is that you don't have so much wheat that you need to use a shovel. That's called a temporary greenery. Fine, says Ravashi Amar, Matam Kamar. Ravashi says, no, the Resha and the Seifa rather are connected. And this is what's called the Matam, which is that the Resha is espousing a principle, and the Seifa is defining that principle. My taima marchikin goren kavua mina ir chamishim amo. So what the Gemara is saying is like this. The Resha of the Mishnah teaches me that I have to distance a granary 50 amas from the city, but yet, again, then the Seifa comes along and says, why is that? My taima, to which the Gemara says, kidei shalo yazik, in order ultimately, again, that the grain, really, what we're concerned about is the flying chaff. The flying chaff should not damage any kind of vegetation or should not pollute the city. So, So we have to distance unestablished granary from the city 50 amos. The same way that we have to distance it from the city 50 amos. Kach marchikin midaluav, umikishuav, umitiosav. So you have to distance it. The luav are the gourds, kishuv are the cucumbers, nitioso are the plants, miniro from the plowed field, shel chaveiro chamishim amo. I have to distance my granary from my friend's items, these items 50 amos, kadesh lo yazik, in order that my grain, the chaff from my grain, not damage my friend's vegetation. So bishlamo Ravashi necha. So according to Ravashi, this makes sense. Because Ravashi explained the Resha and Seifa as kind of as being connected, that ultimately the Resha espouses the principle. The Seifa tells me the reason I have to distance the granary is so that my flying chaff not do any damage. Alabai kashya, but Abai ultimately again this poses a question. To which the Gemara says kashya, you're right, it does pose a question. So the Gemara says bishlama mimikushava midluav da azul afka va asibli bay. So I understand why there has to be a setback between the field, between the granary, and my gourds, my cucumbers, because also the afka, literally the dirt, which in this case means the chaff, could blow from my granary and could go ahead and attach itself literally to the heart of these items, and cause it to wither. However, elaminiro amai. But we'll say, what's the problem if the chaff blows into my friend's field? What adverse impact can that have? Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Vitim Rabbi Abba Bar Zutra, Vipnei Sha'osa Osa Golo. Well, say, interestingly enough, what ends up happening is when the chaff blows into a field, so essentially over time it just converts into fire, into manure, right? Into fertilizer. So apparently there is the possibility that you could over fertilize a field. And if you over-fertilize a field, you ruin the crop. So Rashi says over here, Tap Rashi, Chaf Hei Omed Aleph, Sha'osa Osa Golo, Mar Belo Zevel, V'soref Es Hazrom Shniz Respo. Ultimately, again, I've already fertilized my field. The additional chaff then turns into additional fertilizer. The field now becomes over-fertilized, and the crop ultimately suffers. Okay. So it says the Mishnah, Tap of Chaf Hei Omed Aleph. We distance ultimately animal carcasses. Kvaros are graves. Borsiki is a tannery. Min ha'ir, from the city, 50 amas. Now, it says Rashi, what's the reason for all of these things? Nevelos kvaros mishum reach ro. Because all of these things have the ability to go ahead and give off a bad odor. So animal carcasses, graves, you know, we also remember these days before refrigeration, so the corpse itself, depending on when burial is taking place, could have a bad odor. Borsiki is a tannery, which we know has a bad odor. So all of these things require a 50 amma setback in order to prevent the odor from wafting into the city. Ein osin borsiki ela lemizrach ha'ir. Furthermore, one should only make a borsiki a tannery in the east of the city. Rashi says over here, Ela Mizrach Ha'ir, She'in Haruach Mizrach is Kasha, because the easterly wind is a very soft wind. He says, Ela Imkein Ba'ala Pranos Aval Kidarko Hichama Umenasheves Benachos. Was that since the easterly wind is a soft wind, so therefore what, there's no concern that the odor of the tannery is going to be carried far away. Rabbi Kiva Omer L'chol Ruachu Oseh Chutz mi ma'arava, umarchik chamishim amra. Rabbi Akiva says, you can make a tannery in any direction you want, except for west. Except for west. And furthermore, you distance it 50 amas from the city. We're going to say, we'll define that in the Gemara just a little bit. Umarchikin es ha-mishra min ha-yarak. And once we've seen this before, you have to distance, mishra is a flax pool. You have to distance a flax pool from vegetation. Ve'sakrishem min ha-betzalim. You have to distance the leeks from the onions. Ve'sachardol min ha-dvorim. And so too, again, you have to distance the mustard plant from the bees. And again, I will say all of these cases. Rabbi Yossi matir b'chardol. Rabbi Yossi argues in this case of chardol, in this case of mustard. Again, we discussed this extensively. Rabbi Yossi holds, again, I will say essentially what the Mishnah is saying is the following. That al hamazik laharchik. The Mishnah seems to be saying that at the end of the day, the obligation to distance oneself is on the damager. The damager must distance himself from the damaged party. We saw this, we had this discussion extensively a few days ago. Whereas Rabbi Yossi holds, no, al hanizak laharchik. Ultimately, again, it's upon the damaged party to distance himself to avoid from being damaged any further. So Rabbi Yossi therefore holds Rabbi Yossi that in the case of the chardol and the dvorim, both of them are mazikim. Both of them are damagers, right? Remember, we spoke about this before. The bees are damagers ultimately because they eat the mustard leaves. The mustard is a damager. Why? Because, again, the spiciness of the mustard causes the bees to go back and consume their own honey. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that ultimately, again, when it comes to the plants, mustard plant and the honey, both of them have the obligation to distance themselves from danger. From damage, I should say. By the whom? Rabbi Akiva Heichi comes. So let's remember again, let's go back for a moment to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah taught me about a borsiki, about a tannery. So the Tanakhama, the first thing in the Mishnah said that you can only put a borsiki, you can only put a tannery in the east of the city. Rabbi Akiva said you could put it in any direction you want except for the west. Umarchik chamishim amma, and you distance it 50 amma. So ask the Gemara, by the who? Rabbi Akiva Heichi comes. What is Rabbi Akiva saying? L'chol ruachu oseh v'somech chutz mi ma'arava demarchik nun amma va'oseh. So we'll say, what is Rabbi Akiva saying? That you could put a tannery in any direction, and somech means, and you don't need any kind of setback, you could put it right next to the city. But if you put it in the west, you have to distance it 50 amos. O Dilma, or is Rabbi Akiva saying, no, you could go ahead and put the borsiki, you could put the tannery in any direction you want, as long as you have a 50 amma setback, chutz mi ma'arava de'ino oseklal, with the exception, of course, of the west, where you can't construct a tannery at all. So we'll say, what is Rabbi Akiva saying? To which the Gemara answers this quite explicitly. Tashma, Tisanya, Rabbi Akiva Omer, L'chol ruachu osu marchik chamishim amo, chutz mi ma'arava de'ino osek kol ikar. So we'll say, ultimately, again, the Brisa says it quite explicitly, that Rabbi Akiva says, you could go ahead and put a tannery in any direction of the city you want, as long as you have a 50 amma setback, with the exception, ultimately, of the west, where you cannot place the tannery at all. Why? Mipnei shehid tadira. Abba said, that's a very strange statement. So according to Rabbi Akiva, you may not place your tannery in the west of the city, even if you have a 50 amma setback. Why? Mipnei shehid tadira. Now, the way that literally translates is because it is constant, or it is often, or it is consistent. So, from the Rav Nachman, my tadira, what does that statement mean? So, the Gemara says, ilema tadira beruchos. If you want to say that there's a consistent wind in the west, and that's why you can't go and place the tannery there, because the wind is going to blow the odor everywhere. Vaha amurav chanan bar abba amurav dalit ruchos menashos bechoyom. We'll say there are four winds that blow every day. The ruach tzfonis im kulon. And in fact, it's the northerly wind that blows with all of them. So we'll say, so this clearly indicates to you that what? It's not the western wind that is the strongest wind, rather it's the northern wind. Shil molekin, I will say that word, not for the fact that the northern wind blows with all of the winds. Ein ha'olam is kaima filu sha'achos. The world would not be able to survive in the face of the other winds. The ruach drom is kasha mikulon. And the most severe wind that the world has, ultimately, again, is the southern wind. V'omali ben netz. Shema amida. If you look at Rashi just a moment, ben netz, Rashi says, is malach ha'asui bidimus netz. It is a malach that has the appearance of a hawk. So were it not for the malach, ben netz, what does he do? Shema amida. Ma'amida means he blunts the effects of the wind. How does he do so? Rashi says, b'knafav. So apparently this malach ben netz spreads his wings, blunts the impact of the southern wind, and were he not to do that, mechareves es ha'olam, the wind would destroy the world. Shene emar, quotes of Yerubo say, from the pasuk in Iyov, so the pasuk says, ha'mibinascha ya'avar netz, yifros kenafav letema. So we'll say, remember, this is part of that discussion between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Iyov that we discussed, where Iyov asks all of his questions, and then the Ribono Shel Olam says, your questions presuppose that you understand how I run the world. And God goes through the entire natural order of the world, saying to Iyov, do you understand how I do this? Do you understand how I do this? Ha'mibinascha, do you understand? Ya'avar netz, yifros kenafav letema. Do you understand how it is that I have netz spread his wings to the south? Which Rabbi Yossi is a reference to the idea that the malach ben netz spreads his wings every single day and blunts the effect of the southern winds. So says the Gemara, elamai tadira. So what does it mean? Rabbi Akiva says that you cannot place a tannery in the west because it is tadir. What does that mean? Tadira b'shina. We'll say what it means is that it is in the west, that there in the Ma'arav, that there is a consistent presence of the Shechina. The Shechina is always in the Ma'arav, the Shechina is always in the west, and therefore Rabbi Akiva says, you cannot place a tannery in the west. Dom Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, we'll say it's actually a really beautiful Gemara, because Yehoshua ben Levi says the following. Bo'u v'nachsik tov al avosinu. Let's give a shkoyach to our ancestors. How so? Shahudio makom tefila. Because it was that they have shown us the appropriate direction in which to daven. Dechsev, because the pasuk says, over here the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Nechemiah, Utsiva hashamayim lecha mishtachavim. Well, so the pasuk literally means, the hosts of the heaven will bow to you. Now, what does that mean? The hosts of the heavens will bow to you. So remember again, the sun, and right, the luminaries rise in the east and set to the west. So the Gemara understands, I will say, this metaphor of bowing as the act of ultimately beginning standing erect, which is in the east, and they slowly bow towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a reference to the setting to the west, which indicates to us what? If they're bowing, so to speak, to the west, that indicates to us that the Shechina primarily resides in the west. So therefore, again, why is that important for us? That's important for us because it teaches us which direction to daven. I will say, we're going to get into an interesting discussion about directions for davening. And although we have our preconceived notions about which direction we're supposed to daven in, we'll see that in fact it's a dramatic discussion. So Rishu ben Levi says, we see we have to daven towards the west because that is where the Shechina is. So we'll say, remember again, since the luminaries bow down to you, we view that bowing as the act of setting. So it rises in the east, sets in the west. Therefore, again, the Shechina ultimately is in the west. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov raises a kasha. One second. The Dilma ke'eved shenotel pras mirabo Maybe when it says that they're bowing, maybe they're bowing as a fellow, you know, when a servant gets something from his master. So what does he do? He receives it, he bows, but he walks away bowing, and he never turns his back towards his master. So maybe what's happening over here is the following. Maybe they receive, the luminaries receive what they want from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then they back away from God. Now I will say, if you imagine the image of backing away from God, then what? Then the Ribbono Shel Olam is in the east, and they are backing away towards the west. So maybe, in fact, based on this pasuk, you would say the Shekhinah is in the east, not in the west, to which the Gemara says, you're right, Kasha. That's a good question. Rabbi Oshia says, Shekhinah b'chol makom. He says, Shekhinah is everywhere. The Shekhinah is everywhere. Dam Rabbi Oshia, Mai dichsiv, Atu Hashem levatcha, Atu asisas Hashamayim. What's the meaning of the pasuk that says, again, I will say this is from this same pasuk in Nehemiah, you are HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who alone has created the heavens and the earth. So the Gemara says, Shluchacha, Shluchech, lo kishluchei basar v'dam. You know, God, your agents, your emissaries, are not like the agents or emissaries of man. How so? Shluchei basar v'dam, mimakom shem mishtalchim, l'sham machzirim. So we'll say, l'sham machzirim shlichusam. We'll say, listen to this. Under normal circumstances, if I dispatch someone, I dispatch an agent to do something, so when after he executes the agency, he has to come back to the point of origin to report to me that he has accomplished his particular task. Ava shlucheich, but ultimately, again, Yuri Bono Shel Olam, l'makom shemishtalchin, misham machzirin shlichusan. But Yuri Bono Shel Olam, to the place where you dispatch your agents, your emissaries, that is the place where they're able to give you a report about the agency. I was about to say, what's the contrast here? If I go ahead, I my domicile is here, and I go ahead and I dispatch an agent to do something, the only way I know that he has performed the agency is if he comes back and he tells me. By the Ribbono Shel Olam, the pasuk says, he sends his agents, he sends his emissaries, and the Ribbono Shel Olam knows about the fulfillment of their agency in the place where the agency occurred. Meaning the agent need not come back to the quote-unquote point of origin of the agency to report on the status of the agency. Which is another way of saying that the Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere. He goes on, Shene'emar, Hatishlach Birakim Ve'yelchu, quotes over here the pasuk from Iov, Hatishlach, Birakim Ve'yelchu, V'yomru L'cha Hinenu. Literally, you go ahead and you send the emissaries, and they go, and they go, V'yomru L'cha Hinenu, and they say to you, we are here. So interestingly enough, it doesn't say, Yavou V'yomru Lo Ne'emar. It doesn't say that after you dispatch them, they come back and they tell you that they fulfilled their agency. Ela vayelchu vayomru. They go, they do their agency, and they tell you that they have fulfilled your agency, which indicates that Ribbono Shel Olam, you are where they are. Melameid, shashchina b'chol makom. It teaches us ultimately again that the Shechina is everywhere. Now, both sides. Now, the reason why this is important is because in Rabbi Oshia's model, it would teach you that what? That you could daven in any direction. Right? Daven in any direction you want because the Shechina ultimately is anywhere and everywhere. So that's Rabbi Oshia. Va'af Rabbi Yishmael Saver, Shechina b'chol makom. Even Rabbi Yishmael holds that the Shechina is everywhere. This time of the Rabbi Yishmael, Minayi Shechina b'chol makom, because in the Yeshiva Rabbi Yishmael they said, how do we know that Shechina is everywhere? Shene'emar, Hine Hamalach Hadov Rabbi, Yotze, Umalach Achar Yotze Likraso Acharav. So we'll say, listen to this. Umalach Achar Yotze Likraso. So we'll say, the Pasuk in Zechariah says the following. I'm speaking to one Malach, right, who's coming to me with the word of God, and another Malach, Umalach Achar Yotze Likraso, another Malach, who's also an agent from God, comes from the opposite direction to talk to me. So it says the Gemara, listen to this. Acharav lo ne'emar. It doesn't say that a second malach comes after the first, which are both say, what does it mean if the second malach would come after the first? That would refer to the fact that they're both coming from the same direction. It doesn't say that. Ela likraso. Rather, it means that as I'm talking to one malach who's giving me the word of God, another malach comes opposite that first malach also with the word of God. So we'll say, what does that indicate to us? Malachim who are coming on behalf of the Ribbono Shel Olam, are coming in what? Are coming in all different directions. So what does that show you? That shows you Melamed Sheshchina B'chol Makom. That shows you that ultimately, again, what? The Shechina is in every direction. Va'af Rav Sheshes Savar Shechina B'chol Makom. And Rav Sheshes also holds that the Shechina comes from every direction. Da'amli Rav Sheshes L'shamei. Because Rav Sheshes said to his attendant, L'chol Ruchsa Ukman L'barim Mizrach. So Rav Sheshes apparently was older and a bit infirmed, and he said, listen, when you help me to get up to Davin, so do me a favor and point me in every direction except east. So we'll say it's interesting, right? Point me in every direction except east. Why should I not Davin to the east? And it's not because that the east does not have the Shechina. Rather, Ela Mishum Timoru Bamini, because it will say that's where the Apikarsim daven. Now, why do the Apikarsim daven ultimately again towards these? Look at Rashi. Timoru Bamini, Tamide Ovdi Avodah Zarah Morim Hora, this following Mizrach. So, also remember again, Avodah Zarah often placed incredible emphasis on the worship of the luminaries, and therefore again, they directed their disciples to daven towards the east. So Rav Sheshes says, you can stand me up to daven in every direction except for the east. So we'll say, so far what we have over here is we have Rabbi Shimon Levi, who says ultimately again, we should daven ultimately towards the west. We have Rabbi Oshia, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Sheshes. Rabbi Sheshes, who say that the Shechina is everywhere, and therefore you could daven in any direction you want. Comes along Rabbi Avon. Rabbi Avon Amar, Shechina b'Marav. The Shechina is in the west. Shechina is in the west. Dama Rabbi Avon, my Uria. What is the meaning of the word Uriah? What does Uriah have to do with that? If you look at Rashi, Uriah, if you skip to the middle of that Rashi, right after the period, V'li nira shekach korin lemizrach b'loshon laz, v'ayna dika'amar avir ka, shashchina b'marav upanav lemizrach, v'nimtza mizrach avir. So we'll say, apparently, in Aramaic, they used to call the west Uriah. Now, what's the word Uriah? It's a contraction from Lashon HaKodesh of avir ka, the breath of God. So if you imagine for just a moment, the breath of God is manifest in the west, which means that the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. It's not the west, it's the east. The east is called Uriah. So if the east is called Uriah, if the breath of God is expressed in the east, that means where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu standing? He's standing in the west. So the fact that we call the east Uriah, Avirka, indicates that the Shekhinah is in the west. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, my dechsev. What's the meaning of the pasuk? Ya'arof kimatar likhi. Let my words rain down like the dew. Zu ruach maravis. This actually refers to the western wind. Sheba me'orfei shel olam. That comes from the back of the world. So the Gemara is going to talk a little bit about the power of the winds and the way the winds work. So the Gemara goes on, Tizal ketal imrasi, literally let my words flow down like the dew. Zu ruach tzifonis. This ultimately again refers to the northern wind. Shemazeles es hazav. The Rebbe says causes the gold to depreciate. Now how does it cause the gold to depreciate? Rashi says, because when the northern wind blows, there is drought and famine. Where there's drought and famine, we'll say there's a run on food. Where there's a run on food, there's massive inflation. Where there's massive inflation, currency becomes devalued. Causes gold to become devalued. V'chinu Omer. Similarly, it says, Hazalim Zav Mikis. What says Hazalim means that literally, again, things, the gold becomes so cheap that people spend freely from kis, from the coin pouch. Kisirim Ale Desha. So what does this mean? Kisirim means the winds. Ale Desha come upon the vegetation. Zuruach Mizrachis. This refers to the eastern wind. Shemisaeres Eskal Ha'ulam Kiseir. Literally, it causes upheaval in the world like a seir. Rashi says like a shade, like a demon. Ukurivivim Ale Esev. And like the showers upon the Esev, the grass of the vegetation. Zuruach Diromis. So we'll say this refers to the southern wind. Shimala Revivim. This causes the rain to flow. or to fall, excuse me, umigadeles asafim, and causes the vegetation to grow. Tanya. So we'll say now the U.S. is the following. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Lazar says, Olam, turn the page, I'm a base, la achsadra hidomet. We'll say it's an interesting idea as well. The world is like an achsadra. So what's an achsadra? Rashi says, la achsadra she'in la dofen revius. So the world, if you could imagine, is like an enclosure that has three walls, but is open on the fourth side. The ruach tzefonis ina misubeves. And the ruach tzefonis, literally the northern side, is not enclosed. V'cheven she'egia chama etzal keren ma'arabis tzefonis. We'll say once the sun reaches the northwestern corner of the world, nichfefes, it turns, v'ola lemala min arakia. And ultimately, again, it goes, literally, ola lemala min arakia means it ascends higher than the heavens, which we'll say references the idea that the sun begins to turn back east. So we'll say what the Gemara is over here is describing how they viewed the sun-earth relationship. Ultimately, again, what they viewed as the sun moving around the earth. They're just perceiving what they perceived in nature. Rabbi Yeshua Rishua says, Olam l'kuba hudama. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, the world is compared to a kuba. What's a kuba? Rashi says, Oel shakula mukov. A totally enclosed structure, a totally enclosed tent. V'ruach tzefonis misoveves. And it is the northern wind that ultimately, again, I'm sorry, V'ruach tzefonis misoveves. And ultimately, again, the northern wind encloses everything. V'cheven shekhama magas l'keren ma'aravis tzefonis. And once the sun reaches to Karen Ma'arabas Tzfonis, Rabosa means the northwest corner, Makefes, ultimately again, it turns around, or I should say, it goes around, it encircles, Vichozeres Achori Hakipa. And then Rabosa, it goes back over the dome, Shene'emar, Holech Odorom V'soved Al Tzafon, Holech Odorom Bayom, it goes towards the south by day, Sobev al tzafon balayla, and it circles back to the north by night. Sobev, sobev, holy charuach va'al sivivo, va'al sivivo, va'al sivivosav, shavaruach al pe'elu p'nei mizrach, u'p'nei marav. So we'll say this. What does this refer to? This refers ultimately again to the p'nei mizrach, the p'nei marav, the face of the east, the face of the west. Shepamim misavavasam. Sometimes they both say the sun circles them, and sometimes the sun passes over them. So both say, again, just these two different opinions describing how they perceived the sun-earth relationship and what they perceived as the sun circling and going back over the earth. Hu haya omer. She used to say, I'm sorry, hu haya omer, asa'an Rabbi Elazar, min ha-cheder tavo sufa. So we'll say over here, the Gemara is quoting now from the Pasuk from Iov. Min ha-cheder tavo sufa umi mizarim kara. So what does this mean? Min ha-cheder tavo sufa zu ruach dromis. This refers ultimately again to the southern wind. Umi mizarim kara. And we'll say, what does that mean, mizarim kara? Zu ruach tzefonis. This refers to the northern wind. Min nishmas ayiten kerach. What does this mean? Minishmas yitein kerach. So literally, from its breath, you will give forth ice. Zu ruach ma'aravis. This refers, I will say, to the southern wind. Berachav mayim b'mutzak. Literally, the expansiveness of the water. B'mutzak, I will say, means with the strong current of the turn. Zu ruach mizrachis. This refers ultimately to the eastern wind. Ay v'ha'amar mar ruach d'ru'omis ma'al revivim. We said before that it is the southern wind that causes the showers to come, umigadelas asavim, and causes the vegetation to grow. Lo kasha, it's not a contradiction. Hada asya b'mitra nichusa, habishichusa. We'll say, winds, each wind is different for different kinds of rains. Certain winds are responsible for the rain falling gently, and other winds are responsible for the warrant for the rains falling. Bishichusa literally means with force. Amr Avchista, Avchista said, May dichsiv, Mitzafon, it quotes over here now from the Pasuk, from Eov, Mitzafon Zahav Yaasa, Al Eloka Nora Hod. What does this mean? Mitzafon Zahav Yaasa, Zuruach Tzefonis. This refers ultimately again to the northern wind, She Mazelas Esazar. So we have this on the end of Amud Aleph. The northern wind often brings in its wake, drought and famine, and therefore causes the gold to become devalued. V'chinu Omer, so too it says, Hazalim Zahav Mikis, that when the gold becomes depreciated, or when the gold becomes cheapened, it flows freely from the money pouch. Amar Rav from Bar Papa, Amar Rav Chista. So we'll say, so now the Gemara gets back a little bit from, away from the winds. So Rav from Bar Papa, Rav from Bar Papa said to Rav Chista, Miyom Shecharav Beis HaMikdash Lo Hog Shima Ruach Duromis. So we'll say, from the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, this Lashon is actually very interesting, Lo Hog Shima Ruach Duromis means the southern wind hasn't really taken form. In other words, the power of the southern wind has been blunted. Look at Rashi, it's almost Rashi right across. Lo hok shema ruach dromis, shahaisa regila lahavi revivim tovim. So remember, what did we just say before? It was the southern wind that was responsible ultimately for bringing plentiful rainfall. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that Lamaisa, since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so rainfall has never been as brachadik, has never been as blessing filled since the Beis HaMikdash, which makes sense. Almost like the Beis HaMikdash ultimately again represents the portal for divine shefa, for divine blessing into this world. So the Gemara is just simply saying, not that it stopped raining, of course, but Lamaisa, those same bracha-filled rains have not fallen since the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. Shnei Amar, because he quotes over here from the pasuk from Yeshayahu, Vayigzor al Yomin Verav, Vayocha al Smol Velo Savau, Uksiv Safon Vyomim Atem Berasim. Okay, so if you look at Rashi, Uksiv Safon Vyomim Alma, Yomin Hudaron Vikasa Beira. Fine, Amra Ratan Bar Papa, Amra Chista, Yom Shechara Beis HaMikdash, Ein Hagishamim Yardin Meotzar Tov. Also, from the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the rains no longer fall from what he calls this Otsar Tov, which is another way of saying that since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the rains no longer fall from the Ribono Shel Olam's special Otsar, from his special silo, from his special storehouse. In other words, that in Shamayim, in the heavens, there are different gradations and different levels of bracha. So since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the rains do not fall from the Otsar Tov. Shnei Amar, Yiftach Hashem Lecha Es Otsaro HaTov. The Ribono Shel Olam will open up for you his good Otsar, which indicates to us that in Shamayim, there is a superior quality Otsar and an inferior quality Otsar. So since the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Ribono Shel Olam does not give us rain from the superior Otsar. When we'll say in a time when Klal Yisrael does the Ratzon HaBore and ultimately again resides on its land, so the rains fall down, or the rains fall from the Otzer Tov, from the good silo, from the silo of special bracha b'Kadosh Baruch Hu. But Bizman She'en Yisrael Osin Ushruin Al Admasam, we'll say when we are not living in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm sorry, Bizman she'en Yisrael shurin alad masan, but when we are not in Eretz Yisrael, ein gishamim yarden me'otzer tov. Ultimately, again, the rains do not fall down from the Otzer Tov, from the silo of pure divine blessings. So we'll say, you see this idea, by the way, it also indicates to you the need to go ahead and daven for the Beis HaMikdash. You know, sometimes it's difficult for us to yearn for something for which we have no frame of reference. What the Gemara is trying to sensitize us to is, you know, the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. I will say, it's not just, okay, it would be nice to have, who wouldn't like a Beis HaMikdash? It would be nice, right? It would be nice, it would be wonderful to have it. You'll see, we have to understand that in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, there's an incredible element of bracha, of blessing, that is missing in this world. And only with the arrival of the Beis HaMikdash does that blessing come back. That's what we daven for. We don't daven for a structure. We daven for the Beis HaMikdash is the portal of pure divine blessing from the Elyonim to the Tachtonim, from the celestial sphere to this world. That's what we daven for. That's what we pine for. That's what we yearn for. The rain's not the same. The bracha is not the same. Nothing is the same without the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara goes right there. I'm going to be Yitzchak. Harotze Shiyakim. Well, see, that's a very beautiful Gemara. If someone wants to become wise, so Yadrim, you should daven towards the south. Vishayashir, if you want to become rich, Yatspin, you should daven towards the north. We'll say, how do I remember which direction to daven in? Visimanuch, Shulchan b'tzafon, u'menorah b'daron. We'll say, the way to remember it is, in the Beis HaMikdash, the Shulchan, which remember, had the lechem upon him, the loaves of bread. So that bread is a reference to Parnassa. That bread is a reference to material wealth. So that was in the north. So if you want to become wealthy, you should dive into the north. The menorah, Rabbo said, which is light. Light symbolizes Torah, was in the south. So if you want to go ahead and you want to become rich, daven to the north, you want to become wise, you want to become a Talmud Chacham, daven towards the south. So we'll say, so again, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Rabbi Yeshua says, the Olam Yadrin. No, you should just daven to the south, towards the menorah. Why? Shemitosh Shemeschakim Misasher. Because Rabbi Yeshua says, if you're wise, you'll become rich. Well, that doesn't always seem to play out in life. But again, the Gemara just says, the more wisdom you have, the better your statistical probability of finding a way to become wealthy. Because we'll say the pasuk says, ultimately, again, arichos yamim. If you look at Rashi, he says over here, No Rashi yet. Aruch yamim b'yamina, longevity of days comes in the right. Bismola osher v'kavod. Ultimately, in your left, you have osher v'kavod. So, the Gemara understands that the orech yamim b'yamina is a reference to Torah. Once a person has Torah, then ultimately, again, osher v'kavod will come. So, this is an incredible idea. First of all, just as an aside, what's this idea? If you want to dive in this direction, you know, you have wisdom, dive in this direction, you want to have wealth. What the Gemara is teaching us is something very interesting, which is that in life, a person does have to ask themselves, what do you want? Meaning, you know, if you imagine, again, life being the pyramid, so a person has to decide, like, what's on the top of that pyramid? At the end of the day, what is most important to me? And there is only one thing of primary importance. That's the Gemara saying. In life, you choose a direction. Some people choose the direction that the most important thing is money. Now, again, that doesn't mean money to the exclusion of spirituality. It's just that that's my number one priority, to make money. Or is my number one priority ultimately to go ahead and further my ruchnius and face the menorah? Well, so now I want to be clear on something very interesting. If you'll notice, by the way, the Gemara does not cast aspersions on the person who davens to the north, on the person who davens to the shulchan, as long as the acquisition of the desire to acquire that wealth is for some higher purpose. If the desire to acquire wealth is just for wealth's sake, for self-aggrandizement, for the ego, that's exceptionally problematic. If the acquisition of wealth is to be able ultimately to do wonderful things, then Chazal had no problem with you davening towards the Shulchan in order to acquire it. It's an incredible yisod. So the Gemara goes right to Vaha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omer. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, Shechina b'marav. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said that the Shechina is in the west. Rabbi say, here's the Shaila. If the Shechina is in the west, and now you're telling me that what? That if I want to become wealthy, I should daven towards the south. And if I want to become a Talmud Chacham, I should daven ultimately, I should daven towards the north, right? But if I want to become a Talmud Chacham, I should daven towards the south. But yet you told me the Shechina is in the west. So what am I supposed to do? To which the Gemara says, Demetzadei Atzduye. You know what you should do? Rashi says, Demetzadei Atzduye, Ma'at Metzad Darum. You know what you should do? I will say, choose a direction in which you're going to daven, north or south, but always shift your body a little bit towards the west. As well say, which is an incredible metaphor for life. Sometimes in life, it's difficult to settle in a direction. Sometimes in life, you have to be in the north, and you have to be in the south, and you have to be in the west simultaneously. You have to go ahead and push hard for your parnasa, you have to push hard to become a Talmud Chacham, and you have to push hard to find the Shechina, and you need to find a way to contort your body in all different directions. An incredible metaphor for life. Amar le Rabbi Chanina le Ravashi, ki gon asun diasvisu b'tzafon de'aretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Chanina says to Ravashi, like you guys, reference you guys being the people who live in Bavel, who live to the north of Eretz, so above us to the north of Eretz Yisrael. So Adrimu, you should face south when davening. Umenavon the Bavel that's far of Eretz Yisrael. The Bavel, and here's such a fascinating question. And how do you know that Bavel is to the north of Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara says, Dechsev mitzafon tiftach hara akol yoshe ha'aretz. Because the pasuk says, literally from the north, the evil will open up upon the residents of the land. Rabbi Yosef, what's the obvious kasha? The Gemara asks, how do you know that bubbles to the north of Eretz Yisrael? And the Gemara goes ahead and quotes a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Rabbi Yosef, what's the obvious answer? How do you know that bubbles to the north of Eretz Yisrael? Because you see it. Rabbi Yosef, you see an incredible vart here by a Jew. My MS comes from the Torah. And all of our MS comes from the Torah. Our MS does not come from what the eye sees. Our MS comes from the words of Torah. If it says it in the Torah, state in the Torah, then it's MS. If it doesn't say it in the Torah, even if your eyes tell you that it's true, it's not true. So the Gemara needs a raya that Babel is to the north of Eretz Yisrael. I know that Babel is to the north of Eretz Yisrael because the Pasuk in Yirmiyah says so. I could see it with my eyes. The eyes could see a lot of things and internalize a lot of information, and that doesn't make it MS. Because you understand, whatever you see with your eyes, Rabosai, is processed through your personal filter. And my filter is skewed. My filter is not objective. My filter is informed by my life activities, by my life events. So what you see with your eyes is not pure MS. It's only what you hear from the Torah that is pure MS. What's an incredible yisod? The Gemara goes weiter. You see these incredible yisodos. Number one, the Jew has to live in multiple directions. I've got to learn to face west to the Shechina, while at the same time finding a way to face north and south for my parnasa, for my ruchnius. I have to learn that ultimate MS only comes from what I'm able to absorb from the Torah, and not from simply what I'm able to see. The Gemara goes weiter. So Marchikines HaMishnah Menayach, so we'll say back to earth a little bit. So now what happens? I have to distance. Remember the Mishnah told me that I have to distance things that damage from things that can be damaged. So says the Gemara, Tana, Rabbi Yossi Mati Bechardo. Rabbi Yossi says that Rabbi Yossi, there is no obligation upon either party to remove the chardo or to remove the bees. Because remember, the owner of the mustard plant, Rabbi Yossi, we learned this extensively. The owner of the mustard plant says to the owner of the bees, until you tell me to distance my mustard, harchik devarcha min chardalai, you should move your bees from my mustard. Because again, your bees are coming along to what? And they're eating my mustard seed. So while you're eating, they're eating my mustard plant. So we'll say, remember, it's in the case of the mustard and the bees, Rabbi Yossi says, there is no clearly defined mazik, because both of them are a mazik, because both of them are mazik, and ultimately the obligation to remove the damaging source would be upon both of them. Says the Mishnah, so we'll say, you have to move a tree. We'll say, by the way, so just going back, we're not going to go over it again, but remember, that machlokes Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama is a fundamental machlokes about, in a situation where damage is occurring, who has the obligation to move. So that's a machlokes in Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama. Rabbi Yossi, the Tanakama says, al hamazik laharchik. Tanakama says, the damaging party, has to remove himself from the damaged party. And Rabbi Yossi says, al hanizak laharchik. It is upon ultimately the damaged party to remove himself from that situation. So that says the Mishnah. You have to move a tree from a bar. In other words, there's a tree setback from a bar, 25 amos. And Rabbi Yossi, we've learned this before. In order that what? In order that the roots of the tree not do damage to the bar. And also, when it comes to a charav is a carob tree. Shikma is a sycamore tree. There is a 50 amma setback from a bar. This is true whether, again, the tree is above the bar, whether the tree is, we'll see, below the bar, whether the tree is side by side of the bar. Im habar kadma, we'll say if the pit was there before the tree, so the person planted the tree after the bar was already in existence. Kotzeitz, v'nosein damim. So we'll say in that case, the tree has to be removed, but the owner of the bar is obligated to compensate the owner of the tree. V'im ilam kadam, but we'll say if ultimately the tree was there first, then lo yakutz. Then ultimately, again, the tree need not be removed. The Gemara says, "Im ilan kadam lo yakot." You don't take down the tree. Safek zek kadam, safek zek kadam. If we're not sure which came first, the tree, right? The age-old question: which came first, the tree or the bar? Right? The age of the bar. So we'll say, in that case, lo yakot. There is no obligation to take down the tree. Rabbi Yossi says, "Afapi shabar kodemes leilan." Even though the pit is there before the tree, lo yakot. Ultimately, again, the owner of the tree has no obligation to take down his tree. Why? So we'll say this is the famous sheet of Rabbi Yossi that we've seen quoted over and over again, which essentially says, I have the right to do whatever I want in my chatzer. You have the right to do whatever you want in your chatzer. If it turns out that I adversely end up impacting your property, so listen, as long as I'm operating legally in my chatzer, there's no reason I should have to stop it. So we'll say, this is the fundamental machlokes. We've seen this case quoted so many times. Sira will say, number one, we have the concept that there is a setback. There's a setback from the ilan to the bar. Again, if depending on who was there first, we'll go ahead and determine who has to, what has to be done to remedy the situation. Shita of Rabbi Yossi, everyone is permitted to do whatever they want within their property. Says the Gemara Tana, Bein Shabor Lamata Ve'ilan Lamala. Bein Shabor Lamala Ve'ilan Lamata. So once remember again, the Mishnah said, this obligation of a setback is true, whether the bar is above the tree and the tree is below, or whether the bar is below and the tree is above, whether the bar is below and the tree is above. Says the Rabbi Shlomo Bar Lamata Ve'ilan Lamala. So I understand the case of where what? The tree is above, meaning is at a heightened elevation and the bar is below it. I understand why that's a problem. Why? Because I will say the roots could grow down. The roots don't just grow across, they also grow down. So the roots could grow down and ultimately, again, destroy the bar. Ela bar lamala ve'ilan lamata. I will say if the bar is above and the tree is below, so then what danger does the tree pose to the bar? To which the Gemara says, "Amrav Chaga b'shem Rabbi Yosi mepei shemachligin asakarka umalkin karka yisrael shelbar." Because the Rebbe said the way it works is that ultimately, even if the branches of the tree are not growing into the walls of the bar, if the branches of the tree grow in the proximity of the bar, what they do is they loosen the soil. And once the soil is loosened, that erodes the soil around the bar, around the walls of the bar, and over time can have a negative impact on the bar itself. So even if it turns out that the bar is lamala and the ilan is lamata, ultimately, again, those roots are going to grow under the bar, loosen the soil under the bar, and over time have a detrimental impact on the bar itself, and therefore there'll be an obligation of a setback even in that case. So we'll stop over here. We'll pick up in Meretz Hashem at the two baths tomorrow.